West, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Hello, a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 to Noon Show here in Highland Radio for this Tuesday, a chilly Tuesday. I don't think we saw the snow that was being threatened overnight, did we? That being said, I'm conscious of our sprawling reach in the northwest here. Perhaps it did fall or lie even where you are. Let us know. 086 60 25000, that's the text and WhatsApp number, which is good for anything that you want to talk about today or any comments that you want to leave with us, and your voice notes welcome to that as well. If you prefer to give us a call, Caroline, or taking your calls in 07491 25000, and send in your emails to comments at highlandradio.com. Lots coming up on the show today, including Community Garda information, where you get the very latest appeals and information from Ungarda Síochána first here every Tuesday, just after the 10 o'clock news. Right, let's look at the papers this morning. The Irish Times, lots of the papers, of course, go to press relatively early. I was referencing to Lee Gooch there that the leaders' debate ran very, very late, so not many newspaper headlines to be had here in the northwest. Interesting to see the I don't know why that's running away there. Interesting to see the lineup in the debate, because it was an open draw, right? But as it turned out, the three government parties were either side of moderator. So for Simon Harris and Micheál Martin to end up beside each other would be like, for one of them to be in that position would be like a 1 in 6 chance, right? There or thereabouts. But for the two of them to be side by side in an open draw, the chances are 2% out of 100%. So a 2 in 100 chance. And yet there they were. And on the other side of Miss Hannan was Rudder Kilgorman, the Greens leader. And all the way to the far right was Sinn Féin. Did you watch the debate? Did you get anything from it? The one thing that stood out for me is that seemingly you needed to watch a programme previously or a programme into the future. That was the only one I tuned into, and I didn't get all of it. I got most of it, though. But issues like the climate, which is important. They all said it was the existential crisis, the biggest thing ever happened. It got a lot of time, right? But I'm not sure that's why people are voting. Issues then like housing. It was like, well, watch the debate last week or watch the debate next week. And issues about immigration, that's coming up next week. We don't have time for that now, which I thought kind of interesting, in that that's the only debate I'm likely to tune into, to be honest with you. But some of the big issues that you probably wanted to hear the parties talk about were kind of like, you know, watch it back or watch it into the future, which I thought was kind of strange. But anyway, what did you think? How do you think the various people did? And I'm speaking to everyone out there. I'm speaking to Fianna Fáil supporters, Fine Gael supporters, Independent Ireland supporters, whomever it might be, Sinn Féin supporters. How do you think that your party leader did? Who do you think stood out from the pack? Is there any possibility it might even change your voting intentions? Let us know on 086 60 25000. The one thing I did get a sense of from watching it last night, and I'll choose my words carefully, is that some get it. So I think some get life in rural Ireland, certainly, but some of the pressures facing society, and others kind of, I got the impression, don't. I'm not sure if you felt that way. You can all make up your own minds, of course. But interesting, if you did watch it, if you stayed up late to watch it, let us know. 086 60 25000. The reason I mention all of that is because it's on the front of the paper today. Fine Gael has stepped up its defence of its Louth candidate John McGahan in the face of widespread criticism from rival parties over his suitability. For a second day running, Taoiseach Simon Harris and senior colleagues were required to defend the 34-year-old senator following the emergence of video footage showing him striking a man several times in the head during a late-night incident in 2018. It's not really a very pleasant video to watch. I kind of watched it, but not very nice. Contemporaneous pictures of the victim, Breen White, showing extensive bruising on his face, were also published in a newspaper on Sunday. Mr. Harris repeated his defence of the senator in the 10-way leaders' debate on RTE last night. Mr. McGahan faced charges of assault causing harm arising out of the incident, but was acquitted by a jury when the case came to trial in 2022. But on it goes. And we talked about this yesterday with John and Paddy to some extent. It's just, I suppose, particularly given the way Sinn Féin was rounded on with their controversies. And in fairness, Simon Harris did come back with a strong rebuke to Mary Lou McDonald. But it just is not what they want to be talking about at this time. Also very interested in what you think about this we haven't seen it in this country really on a grand scale. Certainly, I've seen it in British newspapers, but in The Independent, it tells us that Gardaí will take the unprecedented step of publishing the pictures of dozens of rioters who took part in the violent disorder in Dublin city centre on the night of November 23rd last year, as they're set to make more arrests. Around 100 more rioters are on a suspect list, with a public appeal for information to be launched today by Gardaí in a bid to identify the perpetrators behind the disorder. This is the first time in the history of the force that such a tactic has been used on such a large scale in an attempt to identify suspects. So around 100 screenshots, many of them are actually, ironically, are going to be from citizens journalists' videos, because they're down often and in the mix of it all. So many of these screenshots are not just going to come from CCTV, but also from citizens journalists, as they call themselves, their live streams. But they're going to publish 100 faces, effectively, to try and track these people down. I don't know what you think about it. I mean, obviously, maybe the default position is if you're involved in criminality, you should be brought before the courts. But this is just a different approach from Gardaí, and we're curious as to what you think about it. So officers will issue a public appeal for information about the suspects, with people urged to make their nominations on a special section of An Garda Síochána's website, or to contact any Garda station. The development comes after the conviction yesterday of one of the main targets in the ongoing investigation. Now, he said he got caught up in it. A man who burnt out a Garda car and attacked a migrant centre during the Dublin riots told detectives he wanted to support the victims of an earlier stabbing, but got caught up in the violence. He's 28. His name's Declan Donaghy, and he's the first person to be convicted before the Circuit Court over the riots last November, when large-scale violence broke out in the capital after a number of people, including children, were attacked outside a primary school. And he went to great lengths yesterday to say that he is not a racist, that he just got caught up in it. A lot of talk about the four-day week, and to be honest with you, as soon as it was flagged, I thought, right, businesses are going to have to pick this up. A lot of people in our part of the world, it doesn't really suit the working environments. And I was expecting a pushback from business, and today it comes. Businesses have warned the Green Party that the introduction of a four-day working week will leave them crippled and result in higher prices for the consumer. Green Party leader Roderick O'Gorman yesterday said the party would establish a citizens' assembly to examine the introduction of a four-day work week if returned to power. However, business groups have branded the move as unfeasible and out of touch, and warned it would come at an enormous cost to the taxpayer and drive up prices. A conservative estimate from the Department of Public Expenditure shows that implementing the model in the public sector alone could cost how much a year? $5 billion for a four-day working week. I don't know. I mean, obviously, as a worker, we'd all love four-day weeks, wouldn't we? Or would we? I don't know. It depends when you get the day off. Back to the elections, and it's kind of interesting because Jared Hutch has provided so much fodder, really, particularly for the red top tabloids, because obviously of his past and what have you. He's been on the front page of the papers God knows how long, but it's almost like they're returning the favour now, and I'm not saying they're doing it on purpose, but there's no other candidate in the country that is getting as much coverage, and positive coverage, in fact, as Jared Hutch. And it's in all the tabloids, so I'll pick out a story here from The Sun. Gangland veteran and election candidate Jerry Hutch has told how he once settled a five-figure tax bill with CAB, but still had a right few bob left in his pocket. The 61-year-old, who is vying for a seat in Dublin Central, has been branded a criminal by the Taoiseach and other politicians. Last year, he was cleared of the Regency Hotel murder of Kinahan thug David Byrne, and he has just been released on €100,000 bail from a Lanzarote prison after being arrested as part of a money laundering investigation. Hutch remains under investigation there. But anyway, the story goes on to say, and there's loads of different articles giving him an opportunity to say why he's good for the area, why the Gardaí are bad, why the state's all against him. And as I say, that kind of coverage, I don't think there's another candidate in the country that could buy it, because it's relatively favourable. So back to this debate last night, and there's a story in the Irish Daily Mirror on it. The Taoiseach and Tánaiste again made clear their opposition to entering any coalition government with Sinn Féin in the first major TV debate of the general election campaign. Now, this is not unusual when you are actually vying for votes. You say, look, you want to be in government yourself, you want to lead the government. So it doesn't mean they won't enter government with Sinn Féin, because you can very easily say, after the fact, you can say, look, we know what we said, right? But this is a democracy, and we owe it to the electorate to go into government and blah, 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 blah. So it's very easy to backtrack on, but both parties said they wouldn't. Standing together in the RTE studio, which again was a 2 in 100 chance, after a random draw placed them side by side, a 2% chance of that. Fine Gael leader Simon Harris and his Fianna Fáil counterpart Micheál Martin were asked about their intentions if both secured a mandate to return to government. Sinn Féin's Mary Lou MacDonald is hoping to secure a breakthrough on polling day on November 29th that would see her party enter government south of the border for the first time. But again, I understand why they had a 10-leader debate, but only three of them really effectively have the ability to lead a government or to be Taoiseach. So it was kind of like, you know, seven people in the audience there. That being said, there was a couple of people I thought were pretty impressive last night. There's been a couple of hearings over in America. This has happened before. It's about UFOs, and there really are the stuff of what, if it weren't government officials or people that weren't in government, they'd be described as conspiracy theorists. So they're talking about UFOs or UAEs, UAPs, sorry, as they're described. And it really is quite remarkable that you have people very high up in the military and in the US government that talk openly about there being UAPs, UFOs, that they have technology from other planets. You might not have heard this, but there were similar to Oireachtas committees being taking place in the United States over the last week. I watched some of it, and it really is quite remarkable. People very high up in government, people very high up in the military saying that the government, and not just the US government, but other governments around the world, actually have technology from outer space, effectively, and also they have the remains of UFO aliens, effectively. Some are humanoid, others aren't. It's really quite remarkable if you hear it. As I say, if it was on a YouTube channel and these weren't people in the positions that these people are, you would say they're just mad conspiracy theorists. But anyway, an official new US government UFO report has confirmed 21 unexplained sightings. Congress received the annual document from the All Domain Anomaly Resolution Office, set up to investigate reports of unidentified anomalous phenomena, UAPs. The report reveals investigators were tasked with assessing eyewitness accounts of sightings, including a green fireball, a flashing multicolored jellyfish, and a 6-foot silver rocket. Many cases were attributed to known objects, including balloons, birds, unarmed aircraft systems, satellites, and aircraft. But many are inexplicable. And as I said, there are those with very senior positions who could say so much, but didn't have the clearance to say the rest. You should watch it back if you're interested in any of that stuff, because according to these people, one of them said, which I thought was quite interesting, that one of the bodies that was one of the alien bodies was very humanoid. And he was asked, does this mean humanoid, is that a word? He was asked, does this mean, this isn't an official hearing, by the way, I'm not making this up. Does that mean they could be walking amongst us? He says, yes, they could be, because they just look like an AI version of a human. Anyway, fascinating stuff if you're into that. So, and it's come up as part of conversations on a number of occasions on this program. There's an emerging problem here. The old science told us that mica was very, very bad, and I'm not saying it's good, don't get me wrong. So you have houses that have been tested and have a degree of mica in them. But the science has advanced now, and the elements within the products that causes the issue are beyond mica. So you have houses that have traces of mica but aren't at risk of degrading or collapsing, and it's leaving people in a strange position, because we've got, as soon as you hear there's mica in a house, you're not going to buy it, are you? But you could be assured that the house is okay. So it's a complicated area. And I'm pleased to welcome onto the show Michael McClelland, who is kind of in this situation. Good morning, Michael. Thanks so much for your time today. I really do appreciate it.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so your house has mica. And of course, we're trying to avoid the use of the word mica now, because campaigners will say, look, it's far beyond that. What condition is your house in? Is it degraded in any way? Is there any cracking? Is there any problems with it?
No, basically, just a bit of a background there. My house is over 20 years old. It was built in 2004. And the house is in perfect condition, as is every house in development that I'm part of in Bridgend here. And the reality of it is we decided 6-9 months ago, let's go and sell the house. We were thinking about it 5 years ago. COVID came, didn't happen. And we thought, right, well, let's do it now. Let's make the move now. And we, you know, just as part of the process, we talked to the estate agent, made a decision, right, let's get this house tested, make sure, you know, there's, you know, just to speed things up, really, you know, for whoever might want to buy the house. And I came back with a pretty high micro percentage, long and short, after we spent a pile of money, you know, getting it tested. And obviously, bit of a low point for us. But then we realized, obviously, because I've been sort of watching how things have been going, but really because we didn't think we were in it, then really we're probably paying enough attention to it. And obviously then, you know, to your point, obviously the science is now telling us something completely different. Science is out there a couple of years. But I suppose our problem is that we can't sell a house because a potential buyer can't mortgage it because the banks are still looking at this 5% thing around the mica. And obviously,
I just wonder before we get to that, though, I mean, it'd be an interesting conversation, though, to have to a potential home buyer, though, you know, because mica has become such an established word now. Do you think if banks would lend, potential buyers would buy the science and say, right, high levels of mica, but not pyrotite, so we'll process with the purchase this house from you, Michael? Is that something that has to be overcome? But or do you believe that if it was mortgageable, you would be fit to sell it for full market price?
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. I think your second point there around mortgageability, that's the most important thing now for me anyway today. It's going to be a big thing for everybody else really soon, right? But yeah, I think we need to just sort of stop talking about mica probably and just think about, is the house mortgageable or not, right? And there are standards out there, you know, in the UK and England and Cornwall and Devon, there's a standard called Mundic. I know people have been on here before and mentioned that particular standard. It's something that I looked deeply into, right? So that really grades houses for mortgageability. There are 5 grades, 3 are mortgageable, 2 are not. And really, if you think about it, if we had a standard like that, then I think then people like me and other people that have, you know, for example, you think about it, people that are going through, you know, home remediation there, for example, if they're not getting their house completely demolished, the big question for me is that house mortgageable ever? Because the banks are going to pivot now. Hopefully you would have thought 465 gets reviewed or whatever, right? And the banks are going to start listening to that now and they're going to start thinking about that. But how do the banks know for sure that a house is mortgageable? How does anybody know? So I think we need to take a step back and go, is a house mortgageable or not?
The state guarantee, is it a 40-year guarantee?
But what does that mean?
I still haven't gotten to the bottom of that in my own mind
but
yet.
For me, you think about it, the bank's saying, okay, 40-year guarantee for a house that's been remediated, right? But if that house hasn't been completely remediated, you know, the banks are going to go, well, hang on a minute here. You know, this 40, can the government tell the banks to mortgage a house?
No.
I don't think they can. The banks are risk adverse, right?
Well, listen, the thing that I find interesting is that, and this is not political, but the banks were instantly able, seemingly, to respond and express concerns to Sinn Féin's housing policy. Immediately, like as soon as they announced it. Yet they still haven't really stated anything in relation to this crisis. That doesn't make any sense to me. This is not a commentary on Sinn Féin's housing policy. But if the banks can make their position so clear and express their concerns so publicly that need addressed as it relates to one party's housing policy, why at this point is it still unclear where they stand in relation to defective homes, homes with mica that aren't classed as defective any longer, or indeed, you know, remediated homes? My mind boggles. That would make me very suspicious.
It's a great question, because you think about it, you know, we need the banks, we need the insurance organizations, we need the auctioneers and estate agents to get together and you get to the bottom of this particular problem. And the reality of it is, now the way I look at it is, you know, if I was someone from outside of Donegal thinking about buying a house in Donegal, would I, to be honest with you, I would be thinking of another county to buy a house in, because there's that uncertainty that's out there. And I think that problem needs to be solved. And I think without spooking everybody that's listening on the call today, is any house in Donegal mortgageable at the moment?
Well, if every house has maybe traces of mica, or a lot of them do, even though they don't have other deleterious materials, then the answer to that is probably no.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, for me, that's a, like, whether we all like it or not, we're all sort of in the middle of this now, because, you know, the banks, again, like I said before, banks are risk adverse, right? So they're going to be hands off, you know, but actually what they should be doing is be hands on and trying to help us like figure it out. But again, let me reiterate,
instant response to Sinn Féin's housing policy as it relates to mortgageability, lending concerns. As far as I'm aware, zero response 10, 12 years deep into this crisis, which for me is really quite troubling. So you've got a full suite of tests, do you, that show that your house is safe?
Well, my house has been tested twice.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. As I try to get my head around it and understand a little bit better, I got to test it a second time just to make sure. And it's bulletproof as far as I'm concerned. There's no iron sulfide content is where it needs to be. There's no pyrite, which is really important for Donegal, right? And no pyrite either. So there's none of the iron sulfides that are causing the issues in the houses in Donegal, right?
But there is a greater than 5% mica, which obviously means that banks will no longer mortgage on it. Yet there are loads of other minerals, I suppose, in the block that aren't even considered, but are as inconsequential as mica.
Yeah, there's I think there's another one. Maybe I get the right pronunciation, called chlorite as well, which is apparently very similar. And every house, you know, if you do the test, you're going to get a massive amount of that in it as well. But nobody's talking about that one. And it's similar to, I believe it's similar to mica, the way it sort of attracts, you know, moisture and stuff like that. But again, you know, putting that to one side, you know, that I suppose that isn't really a problem, but.
What might be the solution here? For example, you know, I don't use the word mica. If guests choose to use it, especially those that are victims of this, that's okay. But I've gone with the defective concrete blocks, of course. But at the same time, one of the biggest group speaking out against this is called the Mica Action Group, right? And they've retained their name. So whilst that's in there, it's always going to sound like mica's the problem, isn't it? And that's not a criticism. It's just a reality. And I think I proposed to one of them a number of years ago that maybe that was the time to sort of transition to a different name. But MAG had caught on to such an extent, perhaps, that the whole campaign was more important than perhaps the consequences of the name. But what could actually be done in this space, do you believe, or what needs to be done? Because I think it kind of goes beyond banks lending. I think there has to be some sort of a, I don't know what the phraseology is, but some sort of a system or a setup whereby we move away perhaps from the language and it's really clear and there's some assurance for purchasers and sellers.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, obviously from a Mica Action Group respect. I know it's a brand that's recognisable and there's respect there, right, from people, you know, they're trying to work with. But I suppose what we probably need to do here is take a step back and implement some sort of conveyancing standard or more detailed conveyancing standard or a component of the bigger sort of conveyancing laws of Ireland needs to change to specifically dig down into mortgageability of homes in affected areas. You know, I mentioned the Mundic sort of standard over in Cornwall, England, which for me is a great template. Now, obviously, they're dealing with different issues. Their main issue, actually, if you think about it, those houses were built back in the 1950s in England, and that was all about pyrite. Obviously, we've got a pyrite problem in Donegal, but there's pyrite in other parts of Ireland, right? So I think we need to take a step back and call that the overarching standard almost. And if you think about it, that standard grades houses. There's like a B and a C. The C are probably the houses that probably would fall under the 465 standard that we know today around rebuilding or whatever. So Ireland is missing that standard, that call it mortgageability standard, call it a conveyancing law adjustment or change. I suppose the narrative is it's all about mortgageability rather than do we need to fix a house or not, because there's a big gap between, you know, can I sell my house? Well, can someone buy my house? Can I even go to the bank and get extra money to put an extension on the back of my house? Can I flip my mortgage to a buy to let? Can I even do that? I think there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, and also in remediated houses, you know, they can get back in the scheme if need be. This 40-year guarantee, it's all is really kind of convoluted and messy, and there's no clarity in relation to it. But You know, I know you're coming at this, firstly, I mean, you're coming at not, you're not being selfish in this, but obviously it relates to your own situation. But the wider picture here is, and I don't know, there's someone who would know better than I, is the implications for housing in Donegal, because it's a very stagnant, sticky market, isn't it, really? Yeah. Because, you know, we've got perfectly safe houses with elements of mica that aren't moving, they're not shifting, no one's downgrading or no one's, you know, maybe moving out and building another house more suitable, them freeing that house up. Like, it surely does bog up the market as well, outside of the at least 7,000 properly defective homes that are out there.
Yeah, well, that's a conversation I've been having with some of the, you know, the elected representatives around, you know, around the housing marketplace, I suppose, whatever you want to call it, in Donegal. You know, I don't know if any numbers here at hand, right? But I'm pretty certain there's a lot less houses for sale in Donegal than there ever was. And as a result, you know, the prices are probably not where they need to be, just generally. Mm-hmm. Never mind houses that have been remediated or houses that have question marks around whether they're sellable or not.
And what's important in this as well, because, you know, often we take more of an interest in something if we are directly affected. You know, I'm not scaremongering, but how many houses in this county aren't actually affected by this? And maybe someone listening who decides they want to move to a different area, or decides that they want to maybe move into a smaller home or whatever it might be, that this could land on their lap very, very soon. If there's a test and there's 8% mica, your house is arguably unsellable, unless you sell it to a cash buyer who's very confident in the science. Because there's nothing overarching here to sort of clarify the situation. It would be a leap of faith, arguably, because there's no sort of grading for mortgageability system.
Yeah, and that's it. We're in that situation now where, you know, we would like to, you know, move somewhere else, buy a house somewhere else, or whatever, and we can't do that. But certainly, you know, anybody else out there thinking about that now, you know, that you're going to have to get your house tested no matter what. You know, however you progress forward. And one thing that's been suggested out there as well is, and I've suggested it myself to a few people, is some sort of an involuntary testing program for all homes in what might be affected areas. So at least we get a bit of an idea of what the extent of the problem is, assuming we get the science right and we're doing it right going forward.
But if I'm spending $350,000 on a house, I probably still would want to do my own test. You know, because
exactly. No, I think, like, yeah, for me,
do you take? Do you, you know, would I trust that you didn't bore the prevailing wind facing gable? I'm just throwing stuff out there. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. If I'm getting into a 30-40 year mortgage for $350,000 or whatever it might be, I get where you're coming from in terms of the involuntary testing, but I would want to be able to trust those results, even though
absolutely right. Like, obviously, I own my house. I've got it tested twice now, right? But if somebody's really interested in buying it, I wouldn't blame them for getting their own test done too, just to make sure that, because there's been so much mistrust.
You could have tested a block in the shed.
And that's a problem. Like, my house, the main part of my house was blocks from a quarry in Donegal, an unaffected one. Then I built a garage from a different block, so I actually brought in from Northern Ireland. There was a sunroom built, there was a wall built, different suppliers, but all sound and safe. So it's you know, you could be, you're absolutely right, you could be taking boards out of different places.
I don't trust my mother enough. It's not about you or anybody else, but when you'd be going into that sort of an investment. I think it's fascinating. I think it's a conversation that really needs to be had. And I think really, you know, particularly if your house was built after a certain time, but not exclusively, that this does potentially affect you. It's not scaremongering. It's a reality, because you are literally, quite literally, in that situation. So just to recap, Michael here is in a house that has a high level of mica. There are no deleterious materials in it. It's not at risk. According to science, it's not a risk of degradation, cracking, or falling down. But because of the sort of blunt tool that is, we won't mortgage anything over 5% mica, the house is unsaleable. Sorry, the house is unmortgageable. And that, of course, is going to impact on the sale price, which I think, as I say, it's a statement of fact. That's the way it is, Michael, isn't it?
Yep, that's exactly it.
What about house insurance? What's your situation with that?
Well, I still have insurance. I haven't obviously had that conversation.
It'd be interesting if you could remember to, because, I mean, obviously, I mean, do you declare it? If it's not, if do you declare that your house is mica, even if it is only mica and not, according to the science, going to have a negative impact on the future of the house? It's another complication.
That's a good question. But again, it's not something I sort of consider greatly at the moment.
Yeah.
But certainly, you know, we like one of our options was to, you know, maybe put someone on the back of the house and make the downstairs a bit bigger or whatever, right? And obviously, you know, that probably would have opened up a conversation around, you know, with banks around maybe getting an addition to the existing mortgage and insurability. Then we'll probably have to look at because the house is bigger, it's got different components to it. So, but certainly that's a, I don't know. I know there's been conversations out there and people are probably reluctant to do that because what does that mean for them? Because then you can't get insurance and what happens if something, a normal issue happens in your house that's got nothing to do with, you know, defective blocks? You know, where does that go?
So I have so many unanswered questions. Yeah. And as I say, kind of in a way, it drags many of us into it. Listen, Michael, thanks very much for that. I really do appreciate it. Food for thought. And I think it's the first sort of longer format conversation I've heard on a very, you know, a very real situation, particularly for us here in Donegal. Hopefully it gets resolved soon. Thank you very much for your time. I genuinely appreciate it. All right, bye-bye. 086 60 25000. If you have a view on that, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Why doesn't the bank get contractors to build these family homes, like give them 10 houses and a timeline to finish and build temporary homes for the families to get on with their lives, not worrying about paperwork, contractors, delays? These people, poor people, have no life with this nightmare. I banks aren't going to do anything that's not in their interests because they're commercial entities and their loyalties are with their shareholders. There's an outage of electricity, by the way, in the Stranola Ballybuffet area. 1,170 customers without power. And that's businesses, homes, schools, what have you. So that's the situation there. 1,170. They say it'll be restored by 10 a.m., at least partially. So that's why. But also there's question marks staying with electricity. Why does the electricity keep going off in Buncrana in the early hours? It happens a lot yesterday morning and also this morning. It's so annoying. We pay our bills so we accept a proper service. Thanks. Do you know another problem with that too? If your electricity goes off, and it depends, I suppose, who you're with. If you have a monitored alarm and the electricity is cut, often they'll ring you to sort of say, you know, has someone cut your power? Is there an issue? I wonder, are any of you suffering that? Because that does happen. Monitored alarms are great, don't get me wrong, but often it does trigger a courtesy call from them if your power goes off. But anyway, is the power, I'm sure it is because the listener says it is, why is the power going off regularly in Buncrana in the early hours? Let me know, 086 60 25000. All right, good morning, Dolores, Anne and Kathy, among the hundreds of you watching our live stream on our website. Just click the Watch Live button, highlandradio.com. We're on YouTube as well, Highland Radio Ireland, and bumping into people all the time, actually, including a very nice gentleman yesterday in a shop who watches the show every day on YouTube at home, which is great. And you can watch it on your smart TV or Fire Stick as well, because the YouTube app is already loaded up on those two devices, if it suits you. Many of you watching the debates last night, I cannot get my head around the fact that Fianna Fáil got into bed with Fine Gael simply to stay in power. As a very proud Donegal man, my children had to go to other countries to make a decision, to live. The last two Taoiseach in this country were health ministers, and yet our healthcare system rates very low in this country. Every resource is being redirected to immigrants. This country is turning us into a far right people. Our resources aren't being redirected to immigrants. If you don't mind me saying respectfully, there's a ton of money here. There's billions upon billions upon billions upon billions of money available to spend. It's not like there's a pie and all the pie is going to look after or house immigrants. There is money being spent in that direction. But there's plenty of money left. Whether you're talking about attitudes or not, that's perfectly fine. Trump got the biggest election vote in the world, and I just feel sad about what that says about us as people. We're a nasty, angry people. What it says is his message resonated with people. The people who voted for Trump ignored his rhetoric and his history and his comments and focused on his policies because he was very clear on policies. Whereas Kamala Harris was a bit wishy-washy on hers, and it was more about, you know, the future of the country and, you know, divisive politics and all that type of stuff. But Trump spoke to young people, old people, male, female, people of colour and not, and it was his policies that got him elected. It was a narrow enough victory, on the popular vote, but that's what got him elected. And people said, right, he is a this and he is a that, but this is what he might do for us. I was not impressed with any of them last night, but Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in the Green should not be listed on the track record. Speaks for itself. This should be the one of the best countries in Europe, but it's a basket case with health, housing, infrastructure. We need a complete change. If we get the same old thing, we're doomed. Another interesting one of the biggest issues in Donegal, the defective blocks, and not a single mention of it from any of the leaders. Yes, but then again, there was not much mention of housing either. Which I thought was really quite interesting. The only real question on housing was if house prices fall, that benefits, you know, buyers, but what about putting people into negative equity? That was the only housing question that was there. There was very little in it. And I don't think realistically there was an option for anyone to get defective concrete blocks in there. That being said, it would have been nice to hear it. Last night convinced me to vote Aintu, simply because he was the only one who spoke of controlled immigration. The rest are speaking out of both sides of their mouths on the issue. He's a good politician. I can say that because he's not standing here, but he landed some good shots. Greg, watching the big debate last night, Simon Harris and Micheál Martin nodded away to each other when they had something to say, reminding me of watching Jedward or the Chuckle Brothers. That being said, it seemed that Sinn Féin and people before Profit, there was a lot of nodding between them, in fairness as well. So it wasn't just those two guys. But they go on to say, the two parties have lost their identity. Their agenda is to keep all other parties out of government. I hope people see through these two. Thought Padraig Tobin spoke well last night. Indeed, there was a couple that did speak very well indeed. Indeed as well, both Micheál Martin and Simon Harris were quite convincing in certain areas, some might say. Excuse me. Right, quick break, and then we're back talking to Heather Cassidy, a community engagement officer in the Northwest with the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland. Right, so we know it's going to be cold for the rest of this week. I've lost the weather forecast now. Anyway, cold all day. Here we go. Very cold this morning, with outbreaks of rain gradually moving south, turning to sleet and possibly snow over high ground. Sunny and dry spells will develop from the north during this afternoon. Temperatures are chilly, 3 to 6 degrees. Okay. 7 p.m. tonight, Jackson's Hotel Bala Buffet, the Drumbo Suite, is hosting an event from the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland. Heather Cassidy is Community Engagement Officer in the Northwest with the ASI. Good morning to you, Heather.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on this morning.
No, it's great to have you with us. Okay, right. So, I mean, we talk about Alzheimer's an awful lot on this show, as we should, right? Because it affects an awful lot of people. 64,000 people in Ireland that we know of suffer with the condition. And I suppose, you know, is it likely with an ageing population, because it doesn't exclusively affect older people, but primarily it does, that, you know, that figure is likely to rise. Hopefully there's advancements in treatments and early diagnosis and what have you, but that would be the sort of direction of traffic, one would think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is predicted to double in the next 25 years to 150,000 from 64,000. So we do see year on year an increase in people coming forward for our services and getting diagnosis, and as well you're seeing a lot more younger people, so under the age of 65, who are also coming forward with early onset dementia.
Now, is part of this event really, I suppose, to sort of give further understanding to what Alzheimer's is? Because I would say people perhaps, unless they you know, have experience or an understanding or what have you, probably have quite a narrow view of it.
Absolutely. I suppose that before it would have come into my own family, I would have had very little knowledge of it either. So I think events like this are really important. Firstly, we will talk about dementia and what it is at the event, and then we'll highlight our services in County Donegal.
So you've just used the word dementia, right? So what's the relationship between the word dementia and the word Alzheimer's?
So dementia it's like an umbrella term for many different forms of the disease, of which I believe there could be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of types of the disease. So if you refer to it as dementia, that covers everything. So it's just, it makes it easier for people to have one term that they can reference to.
What you know, obviously this event tonight, you'll be able to go into great detail and take the time that's required. But where are the gaps in our understanding of the conditions, do you think? Is it easy to pinpoint a couple?
I suppose we would find that it's you know, people would get a diagnosis and, you know, it's just a term. So, I mean, it's people coming forward to try and figure out what that is then. So if we have dementia advisors that can help people with that, that's a gap that we have someone there now, two in the county that people can go to and they're there to help them. So that would have been a gap that that we noticed that was needed. Other gaps would really be the need for support and services into the home and in the community. Really, we're working on that all the time to increase services for the region. You know, also education, I think, and educating our young people, educating businesses, services, organisations and individuals in the community around dementia. I think that's a gap we're hoping to fill with
this. Yeah, and I presume with that understanding comes, you know, more inclusivity, like an understanding, firstly, not jumping to judgment of someone based on how they present, that, you know, you could presume it's one thing, but it could be another. But also to ensure that society is inclusive, that someone with a dementia diagnosis doesn't disappear or fade into the background, that they can still, you know, be visible and functioning to the best of their ability in society.
Absolutely, because as well as them becoming isolated a lot of the time, their family around them can also become isolated, and it affects their, you know, connections with people, with neighbours, with friends, you know, with family, with relationships. It can affect a lot of things around the person with dementia. So I think, you know, having that understanding and awareness in the community is key. So someone can continue to live independently as long as possible and be supported by their local shop. If they go to a hotel, if they're out in the community, wherever they are, that there's an understanding. And that's what we want to foster with this event, is that understanding and compassion and awareness and all those good things that Irish people are so good at anyway. So I think we're just ramp it up a little bit for someone who's, you know, either, I suppose, elderly or with dementia or anything else, or has any additional need.
Yeah. One of the guests tonight will be Mary Tolan from Donegal, who will be very relatable. She gets a lot of support from Alzheimer's Society of Ireland, as she cares for her husband Dermot. He has Alzheimer's and frontotemporal. I'm not sure if that's the full title. That's what's written in front of me. But it certainly will be interesting to hear from Mary, because, you know, often you can talk and we can talk about what supports are available, but it'll be good to hear from someone who's availing of those supports and the impact it's having on their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Like Mary, like so many others in the county, every week would have been getting service from us in the community through our home care and through the daycare services. So just hearing her story is amazing. I mean, there are lots of people like Mary out in the community who could tell a story, you know. So it's just great that she's willing to come forward and travel down tonight to tell us all about it and, you know, share her, I suppose, her view of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think she comes from a very, you know, positive viewpoint about the disease and you know, how that understanding and openness and conversation between her and her husband really informed her coming to the event tonight to speak. So just opening up conversations is important, even at, you know, when someone gets a diagnosis.
All right, okay. So it's 7 p.m. tonight in the Drumbo Suite in Jackson's Hotel, Ballybuffet. Beautiful setting, good parking there as well. And can people just turn up on the evening, Heather?
Yeah, absolutely. This evening, people can arrive at 7 and we'll have our speakers and, you know, hopefully it'll be a nice evening and you'll leave more informed about dementia and about what we see for the future as well with our community engagement team in the region.
Yeah,
with
okay.
Friends of ASI, yeah.
And I'm sure we'll hear more through this channel on those matters into the future as well. Thank you, Heather. Heather Cassidy, Community Engagement Officer in the Northwest with the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland. Some of your comments as we head towards the news at 10. Can any of the candidates explain what is being done to help the traffic situation in Letterkenny? Normally there's a rush hour between 5 and 6 in the evening. Now it starts at 3 p.m. as soon as schools are in, and it continues until about 7:30 p.m. into the evening. It's an interesting one because I was having this conversation with someone yesterday, and it just seems to be, of course people are getting on with their business and they must be in their cars for a reason, but it just kind of feels like everyone's busy going nowhere, if that makes sense. Now, that's easy for me to say, stuck in the middle of it with something to do, but you know where I'm coming from. It's not a criticism of anyone. Are people happy with the new farming point system for the commonage in the hills of Donegal, asks a listener. It's nothing more as another waste of money. As a farmer, I think it's shocking that no farmers group is kicking up a fuss about it, especially now that an election is looming. So this is not something I'm overly familiar with, but always willing to learn. The farming point system for commonage in the hills of Donegal. Anyone got a view on that? Let us know. Very biased coverage of the debate there on the news. Mary Lou makes a point. Harris' reply cut to one word. Yep, I take on board what you're saying there. That's a reference to our news, and we have to be open to scrutiny as well. Like you, Greg, I thought the debate was on too late. I didn't watch the whole programme. I went to bed. Yeah, well, at least he didn't fall asleep in front of the telly. I watched the debate last night. I certainly was not impressed with Simon Harris. He certainly came across as insincere, just going through the motions, not really engaged, says that listener. Fine Gael Taoiseach Simon Harris distanced himself from the new Children's Hospital, signing off. Is this taking people for fools to a new level? Looking forward to the GE debates, a nice mix of government and independence to watch. Our debates start next week, by the way. We've invited everybody. I mean, obviously, that broad format with 10 or 15 or 20 people, it's not doable. And we're breaking it up into three. We did a draw in relation to that. So we're going to be having three debates next week. We'll tell you about the days and what have you as we get candidates confirmed. But hopefully it will help, you know, make your decision in Donegal. And it really is important that we vote. I know some people don't vote, lots of people don't vote, but it really means that we have full control over, you know, we have full responsibility if we all vote, if that makes sense. Right, okay, I'm going to take a break for the news and obituary notices, and we have Community Guard information coming up after 10.